Hey, have you heard the new music for my show? It's called Microcosm, and it's written, produced, and played by Dr. Lodge McCammon. You can find out more at lodgemccammon.com. Thanks, Lodge.
Hi, I'm Dan Krynas from the Leader of Learning podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com, and get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, this is the conclusion of my two-part interview with Dr. Lodge McCammon. You know, the author of the book School, The Story of an Education. If you haven't listened to part one, step on over to episode 190. Well, unless, of course, you like to know the ending first. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Let me jump in real quick. I just made me think of it. Something that I wanted to also point out in terms of this classroom observation thing, and maybe we'll touch on this in a second as well, but there's also many times in my experience with many teachers that I've interacted with, there is a difference between what teachers say they do in the classroom. What they say they do, I do all these projects and all these things, and then going to observe, sometimes the story is a bit different. Because teachers, you know, we advocate for ourselves. We talk about our best lessons. We talk about our best ideas and that sort of thing. So that's an important thing as well, that if we're trying to help people be better, it's better to know the full truth. Yes, you're doing all these awesome things. How can we, for example, free up time for you to do more of these awesome things? So instead of once a month, you're doing them six times a month, those types of things. And knowing the full story through the classroom observation, unannounced classroom observations, in my experience, are best to get that, to help fill in those gaps of, yes, you're doing awesome things, but sometimes it's not as awesome. How can we make every day awesome?
Yeah, that's good stuff. It's funny because, one of the aspects that I that comes through loud and clear is that you discovered that a lot of times and I think this kind of goes back to that that bucket thing and standing out and being worried about standing out and it's going to change my world, is that you ran into people who say things that, you know, they do this or they do that, and then you go watch them and they just change the name of it. They they don't really, you know, I love that section where you talk there, that they, you know, it's instead of, you know, whatever the activity, you know, it's still kind of a sit and get classroom. It's just that they use the word discussion instead of lecture, or they use the word, you know, they use some other word to describe it, so it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting.
Well, that is it seems to have become part of the culture in education, that, you know, making change is very difficult, and some people are averse to it, or are very standoffish about making big changes in their classroom. So one survival mechanism that I've seen be somewhat pervasive is, how you shouldn't ever lecture. Lecture is bad. So, but lecture is something that many, many teachers rely on a day-to-day basis. So if somebody's telling you it's bad, you don't want to be doing the thing that's bad. So one of the ways to get around that is I don't lecture, I do direct instruction. And then if they say direct instruction is bad, you say, okay, I don't do direct instruction, I facilitate discussions where I'm talking most of the time. But if that's still not good, then I do modeling, which is something that came up when Common Core came about. You know, modeling is where you stand up and you tell the kids what they need to know. So, you know what I mean? But the practice doesn't really change. Many times it's just how we talk about it. And this happens. I mean, another example they talk about in the book is, personalized learning. You know, you got to personalize the learning for kids. Well, that didn't really catch on, so we're going to call it differentiated instruction. well, that didn't really catch on, so we're going to call it Universal Design for Learning. And that didn't, you know, like, and here we go. We just kind of just keep renaming the same. I mean, we keep renaming good teaching practices or trying to get people to these active learning strategies. But, you know, it of course, it's easier to rename something and have people be like, okay, what I'm doing in the classroom is great because I'm doing this new term, than to make these sweeping changes, which is a much, much more difficult task to get people to really shift their instruction. So I get it. It makes perfect sense. I mean, it's exactly what people should be doing. And honestly, you know.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's interesting because I've seen that, you know, and it's funny when this was another one of those points in your book where I just went, yeah, I've been there. That's, you know, that's one of those things you see that all the time where people say, either they want to say, well, I can't do that, or they say, I already do that. And you go, really? Can I come watch? And you put that in there, you go watch and go, well, that's not it. And I just think that's hilarious because I've seen both of those. It's either I can't or I do it and it's really not that. You know, it's like one of the things that, you know, it personally, one of the things that I talk with teachers about is the importance of understanding whether kids are getting it while you're going through. So you need to check for understanding. You need to use some sort of ungraded quick assessment that's going to help you. And lots of teachers like to use things like thumbs up and thumbs down. And I tell them, that's not really what I'm talking about. I said, because that's kind of measuring the environment in the room. Because if you talk about a kid like Steve, I was the kid in class that I don't want to stand out from the crowd because I'm worried that somebody's going to, you know, make fun of me if I'm the wrong one, right? You know, if I chose the wrong side of it. So I'm going to look around me before I put my thumb up or my thumb down, right? So I actually need you to figure out whether I'm getting the math, I'm getting the history, I'm getting the English. You need to do something to figure it out with me. And that's one of those things where I run into that a lot. They'll say, well, I do that. And you go watch them, you go, that wasn't formative assessment that you were using in there. You didn't plan for it. You didn't do all this sort of stuff because it is difficult. It takes a lot of time to do these practices we really need to be using. So I hear you. You know, one of the things that you say in the book is that you really were that you failed as a teacher. Do you want to say anything about that before we move on?
Yeah. Well, I'm really hard on myself. You know, I really direct most of my blame inward, and I felt it was my job as a teacher to engage every student every day. I didn't really talk about it like this back then, but you know, in active learning, you know, get students engaged in the content every day somehow. And very, very, very quickly into full-time teaching, I devolved into what I refer to throughout the book as the pattern. I devolved into, you know, the only way I'm going to be able to get through the content, to follow the rules of the pacing guide, you know, how I have to, you know, what subjects I need to teach in what days or what topics, what days, is to lecture a lot, is to stand in front of my students and just say a bunch of stuff while they're sitting down, passive. You know, I'm not checking for understanding in any meaningful way. I'm having quote unquote discussions with one or two students throughout each thing. But those discussions are just lectures for everybody else. It's just lectures interrupted by somebody else saying something. I just felt like I totally failed. I really could not figure it out. I couldn't figure out how to engage every student every single day in active learning. And I took it very personally. And because I was so anxious about that and stressed about that, it broke down my health. I had a hard time sleeping for such a long time and just was really, really down on myself for not being able to kind of solve this equation, solve this problem, build an economic model around this thing called teaching that results in students being engaged every single day. And so I left and tried to go figure it out.
And so that, when you leave, this is going to take you on your journey that's going to lead you to your doctorate and eventually to your kind of involvement in trying to find out how to make things different. One of the things that and of course your dissertation was focused on music in the classroom, right? Chemistry of music.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I love your description of what a dissertation is.
The plus or minus thing?
Yes. My sons would totally agree with you that, especially the part about it being a boring book that nobody's going to read. Maybe one mm-hmm. or two people.
Your mom doesn't count.
Yes. Anytime my sons are around me and I say, well, when I wrote my dissertation, they go, oh, run, because. So
that's about right. Yeah.
What I'd like you to do is, because as you're developing this and you get into the, you're learning a little bit out, because you're looking for basically what you see as the problem in school, and you're looking for ways of solving that. And that thing that you find is that finding time for teachers. And am I right there?
That was one of the, so the book kind of takes the reader through a series of things that I think are kind of over. And again, back to the classroom observation. And I really try to make this distinction between, I'm not talking about one classroom, and I'm not talking about one classroom in a school down the street. There are tons of exceptions. There are tons of exceptional teachers, of course, where all sorts of different things are going on in classrooms. But looking across, let's look across thousands or even hundreds of thousands of classrooms. What are the biggest trends that keep teachers from being able to create more active learning environments? Like what's in the way? And, so the book takes through a couple ideas I have of things that are in the way. One of the biggest ones is that I finally realized, it's a time issue. Everybody's just, it's crazy. The bell rings and you have all this stuff to do and all these responsibilities and all these different student personalities and all this stuff. And you're just trying to get some information across so that they get the knowledge that they need for your classroom. I mean, it's a dead run. It is a dead run. So asking somebody who's in the midst of that to be like, hey, here's a new app that you should try, or here's a reading strategy you should integrate, or, it's like telling somebody, who's running as fast as they can run to just run a little faster. You're like, I can't. I'm so overwhelmed with everything that's going on. So it seemed to me that one solution might be figure out how to make more time. And that leads us down the path of how can we teach more efficiently, thus using our time in more productive ways, which again, leads to some other conversations we've had in the past about, flipping the classroom and using video to present some information that can free up a significant amount of time, getting us to a place where teachers, instead of like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed, I can't do anything, to, yeah, I've got a bunch of extra class time because I've made my classroom efficient. So what do you got? Let's try some things. Let's be innovative. I think that's where we want to go. And to me, time, figuring out a way to create time for teachers was a big waypoint moving forward.
Yeah, that's having worked in traditional, because my teaching was always in high school, and I worked in high schools where we had traditional time frames, 45, 50, 55-minute classes to 90-minute, and even in one place we had 90 to 110-minute classes. And if you want to discover about time, and it makes you really appreciate when you go from a 110-minute class to back to a 50-minute class, wow, that went by fast. It's interesting when you start realizing just how precious some of that time is, and you wish that you had more, and then when you get more, suddenly you go, do I have too much time? Do I need all this time every day? And just interesting observations, though, from my own there is connecting with what you're talking about. It's amazing what you were seeing, because you do notice that, and I got to speak just from the working with people, they do look at you sometimes and go, you do realize all this stuff I'm trying to get done now, and you want me to do what? That is definitely a big part of our school world. So while you're
just to interject real quick, you can start to see the connection between, you know, it's crazy. Teachers have so much to do. Their job is so important, and they have so many responsibilities, so many tasks, and most teachers that I come in contact with or know, or it's an avalanche of continued things. Now you got to do this. Now you got to do this. Now you got to do this. Now you got, it's constant. So it makes perfect sense why we have gotten into this pattern of, okay, so I one of the 17 things you just told me that I should or shouldn't do right now is no more lecturing. Okay, you know what I have time to do? I have time to change the term from lecture to direct instruction. That's what I have time to do. I can do that as I walk back to the classroom, and then but I don't have time to do anything other than that. Totally get it. It makes perfect sense. So it's the time factor seems to be this central piece that doesn't really allow anything else to happen, or very few other things to happen other than these sort of peripheral, I'm going to change the name of my instruction so I'm compliant. And then we move on. And then I keep going because I've got 5,000 things to do right now. I don't have time to, you know, think any more about that. Check. Direct instruction. Got it. Move on.
It is so real right there. So what, you know, as you're work in your doctorate, you complete your doctorate and you focus on the music, you know, eventually what starts to happen is you have this world that you move into, and you talk about it, how this happens in school. You talk about this movement into where people start paying attention to your message about flipping the classroom and about the one take videos and so forth, and you're doing these speaking engagements and such, and then you get other people's attention where you start having the ability to start talking about you know, making change in policy, actually talking with lawmakers and such, and you know, and I gotta use this sentence from your book. The angry horde seemed to have moved on to burn the next village. You know, if you had this part of your world to do all over again, would you do it differently, or would you still talk with these lawmakers and focus on that the possibilities of making change in their world as far as their approach to school?
Yeah, so my experience with policy was fairly short lived. you know, had a couple of, you know, it's sort of back to the crab mentality, like to how we kick this off. And also the other video about, you know, don't wait for permission to share your ideas. I had the opportunity to participate in some policy level thinking, some policy level discussions. And I would say it was very unsuccessful in making any kind of significant or meaningful changes. What it seemed to do was establish some people who now think that I'm a terrible person for having what I would consider opinions. I shared some of my opinions and thoughts about how some policies might be used, or how we can think about policy in a slightly different way. It was nothing. I wouldn't say anything that I was coming up with. I'm being general now because I want people to read the book, of course.
Of course.
But, you know, some of these ideas were, they did not strike people well. This one particular, I created a document, and I sent a document to this committee that was going to be talking about policy in North Carolina. That document was shared publicly. And that document got picked up by, you know, a couple of policy watchdog groups here in North Carolina, and then went on this national stage where the framework of the policy was, oh, this policy is being considered by the General Assembly in North Carolina, which was not true at all. But, you know, with that framework and what I wrote, it caused people to get upset, kind of kind of how, you know, this is awful. Like, I can't believe that North Carolina is considering this. And the author of this is a terrible person who doesn't know anything. And what an awful idea. So there were a lot of those kind of comments during this news cycle, news cycle being what, 3-4 days. So it just felt really bad. You know, it felt really bad to be attacked. But that's the way that the world is. That's the way that, especially, I mean, look at what's happening in our country right now. You know, it's these, a lot of people are sort of attacking one another for any idea. I'd be like, this guy is blue. Somebody's gonna be like, how dare you? How dare you, this guy? If I say, hey, we shouldn't serve pizza in school anymore because it's high in saturated fats and sugars, how many people would come out of the woodwork and be like, you are an awful, how dare you? Pizza is the greatest thing in the world, and my kid loves pizza. He won't eat anything else. What's my kid supposed to eat now? And you know, you've been on the internet.
Oh, yes.
You know how this works.
Oh yes, that's
and the policy issues. I feel as though I have a right to my opinion. Maybe that's not the right way of saying it. I think that every opinion is valuable as long as it's not spreading hate. I think my opinion is valuable, and I would love, I try to participate when I hear others' opinions. I try to participate and like, okay, that's an interesting opinion. We should maybe think about that. And that's about the extent of it. You know, let's think about it. Or I can just say, that doesn't really work for me. But there was anger. There was anger directed at me in a number of different ways. And, I just want to make sure, one of the reasons I talked about this in the book, I'm trying to give people a perspective. It's important for me to deliver the message that I want people to be able to share their ideas. As long as they're not spreading hate, I want people to share their ideas, because that's how we move forward as a society in education. The last thing I want is for teachers, people like me or any teacher, to be scared to share an idea that may help a lot of people. Back to the crab mentality thing. You know, I think that I want to try to empower people to tell their stories and share their ideas. And yes, this thing happened to me, but the way I look at it is that it's because it was, maybe it struck a chord, you know, back to the crab mentality. Maybe it's a thing that, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, this would cause way too much change. This is way out there. So we got to tear them down. You know, I kind of look at it as, in a way, success, and it's success mostly because I gained wisdom from it. It helped me expand my understanding of how to present ideas, how to talk to people. So it was a great thing for me. And I, of course, would never say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. I shared an idea that I thought was interesting, that I thought would spawn conversation. And I wanted to encourage people to share their own ideas. It went a little off the rails than I anticipated, but I don't take it back.
That's what I think, you know, that's what's great, is that you don't want to take it back, because it is, like you said, we should be able to have a discussion about, here's what I observed and this is what my thoughts are. And when you say this is what my thoughts are, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't have just lit a powder keg because you totally disagree with me, or because you heard what you think you heard, or wanted to, you know, heard what you didn't really want to hear. And so therefore everything's bad, and I'm now, you know, the worst thing that has ever come to education. And you're right. I mean, we run into this so much today. I mean, even some of what you're talking about, when whether it's Instagram talking about my latest vinyl LP that I've bought, sometimes I watch my words just a little bit more, because I'm like, is that going to is that out there what I just said, or am I good? You know, you know, I understand you. It's strange how we really have come into a time frame in which having a conversation about ideas is tricky.
it's very tricky, very contentious environment that we live in, and I think that can be good. You know, people disagreeing on fundamental issues is good. That's how we work through things. But the I think it can be pulled back a little bit. I think personal attacks are not great. You know, again, people spreading hate in response to an idea, I don't like that as much.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's because we should be able to have these conversations, and it's just crazy stuff when you can't. So let's kind of go back, and because over the book, one of the things that you can't, you know, avoid is that you do come back to this idea of, you know, in watching classes and observing and watching teachers do and so forth, that you know, time and change, these words keep popping back up into what you describe that you learned. What would you say is your biggest lesson learned when you were in the classroom and then focusing on trying to get teachers to make the classroom instruction more efficient and so forth and create more time? What do you think your biggest lesson was that you learned throughout all of this?
Yeah, so I was thinking deeply about this question, or I was thinking about it this morning before we started chatting. And really what I've taken away from this is that is a rekindled excitement about what I've been doing and what I'm passionate about, because there's so much room to grow, honestly. You know, like there's so many amazing things that teachers are doing. There's so many amazing things that can be done. There's so much evidence now, video evidence and otherwise, because of the internet, that can be shared, and all these incredible things you see going on in different classrooms. And it's just a really cool idea to start to really do the work now. The work is, we have all these great things that can be done. Now we really need to help people get there. You know, and by people, I mean a lot of teachers. You know, we have to move the masses now. And that's a really cool struggle. It's a really interesting challenge. Like, okay, so we have all these best practices. We've had best practices for days. We've got activities for days. We've got example days. Now, how do we get the mass of teachers to start moving in that direction, moving away from just saying they're changing their, you know, changing the name of their instruction to actually changing their instruction? And that's fascinating. And I love that challenge. It's one of the things I'm very passionate about, trying to figure out ways that have worked for me, you know, in the ways that I present information to teachers, you know, inspiring them, engaging them by demonstrating these teaching methods that I'm promoting. But even the way that you talk to somebody can make a big difference. You know, the words you use when you're trying to get them to change. And then also, of course, I mean, the last big thing, probably the biggest thing that I've learned, is the power of video reflection. You know, it's why I do what I do with all the songs in my room here, in this living room here, just this constant iterative process of create a story, you know, tell a story, create a song, teach a lesson, video record it, watch it back, do it again, watch it back. And you're going to be improving and improving. And after you've done it 1,000 times, you're going to be a totally different presenter, storyteller, musician. And that's what I want for everybody. You know, that's the thing I've learned the most. And I've gotten the opportunity doing this work for the past number of years. I've gotten to see people move in that direction. And it's incredibly powerful. It's simple. It is pretty simple. It's intimidating and it's hard to get started, but it is incredibly powerful. It's rewarding to be able to watch that.
That's cool. It's, you know, it's when you see just a strong teacher teaching and working and doing the things that are possible, and you see the kids coming along and getting into it and wanting to, you know, do the whole, you know, get messy in there, to steal from a line from Miss Frizzle, sorry, children's book. But the, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it is cool though, because that's part of what inspires you when you see people. Because teaching, one of the things, getting back to some of that, the people who don't understand what the attraction is, I mean, you're helping somebody figure out their world. You're helping somebody figure out their dreams. You're helping somebody, you know, you never know what it is that you do that helps you connect with that person over what you're trying to work with them on, and, you know, in the classroom. And if you approach it that way and you're working to do better and reach all the kids, you just never know when that magical moment happens where the light bulbs go on, even if it's a bunch of years down the road and that person runs into you at Six Flags or Disney World or something and says, I don't know if you remember me or not, but, you know, and they feel compelled to say thank you or something. And that's, you know, one of the just the powerful things, like you're talking about earlier about teaching, is that you're making a difference in our future, our country's future, our society's future. And
nothing more important.
You got that right. So, you know, if a listener would like to reach out to you and learn more, what would be the best way?
Well, you can visit my website. It's lodgemccammon.com. That's probably the best way. It's kind of a portal for all the different things that I do.
And it's awesome, too. There's all kinds of stuff there. You can listen to his music. You can listen. I mean, there's all kinds of links to everything that he does. And, you know, are you on social media any, or do you just want to go to the website first?
You can find me on Twitter and Facebook. Those are the social media outlets that I use most frequently.
Okay. And I'll make sure I put links to them in the show notes. So those of you who are driving, you don't have to get out of that pencil right now. You just go back to the show notes and we'll have them there. And Twitter's Pocket Lodge, right? Is that where you are for that?
Yeah. At Pocket Lodge. Yeah. Sorry. I should have said that.
Cool. So, and now you also do presentations and training on the topics of engagement and flipping the classroom and music and movement in the classroom and other things. How do they find out more about that as well?
You can check out a lot of those resources and samples and examples are available on my website. But you could also search Lodge McCammon in YouTube if you wanted to, and you're going to find a bunch of stuff there as well. So I've got two YouTube channels. One is Lodge McCammon. The other one is Flipped Teacher Training. So that's another resource that you can check out.
Excellent. So, and then the next thing I want to say is, where can someone get a copy of Schooled?
Oh, you can find Schooled, The Story of an Education, on Amazon.com. Just search Schooled Lodge McCammon or just Lodge McCammon and it should pop up.
Excellent. I couldn't go chapter to chapter and I couldn't go segment to segment, but there's a lot of stories in there that you're just going to want to read more. Like I said, he starts it with a sentence and you go, oh my gosh, I can't stop here. I'm going to have to keep reading. And you're going to want to know all that stuff that we didn't get a chance to talk about. What I'd like to do before we finish is, I have two last questions, Lodge, and it goes like this. First one is, if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them about being exceptional?
I would give them three pieces of advice. First, identify and stay away from the crabs in your school. You're a new teacher. You don't need to be inundated with, I mean, if we're staying with the metaphor, the crabs. And you may find there may not be any in your school. I'm not suggesting that there will be. Just these are people that are very negative, very closed off to new ideas. And most likely, if you're just starting teaching, you have some new ideas. You have energy around your new ideas. And it's important that you retain that energy and try those new ideas before someone talks you out of it. So just be mindful and steer clear of some of those crabs that might be in the teacher workroom. For example, in my experience, it was a lot of the teacher workroom. You walk in there and it was just really negative. A lot of negative things going on in my teacher workroom. Two, don't be afraid to try some new strategies. It's perfectly okay if the lesson plan falls apart. It's fine. It's fine. That's how you generate wisdom. That's how you get better. So you just got to try new stuff. You really don't learn much, or in my experience, I haven't learned much from being successful. I've learned a lot more from failing, honestly, and thinking about what I did wrong and what I would do better. And then three, I think it's important to find a lot of people use this word now, find a tribe, peers at the school. Social media is a great place for this, of course, because we have an international tribe now. You know, a lot of people use Twitter, a lot of people use Facebook to join these different groups. And the great thing about this is you can find people who are also trying new things, who are even trying the same things you are, and you can talk about those. It widens your the ability of you retaining, or it allows you to continue to retain that energy. You know, if you don't feel like you're alone, if you don't feel like everybody's, just complaining all the time, that kind of stuff. So you can find those tribes pretty much anywhere. And the greatest thing about finding your tribe, especially, well, in the school or even, you know, on social media, is that it'll encourage you to share your stories. You know, share your stories of success, share your stories of challenges, but share your stories. Don't be afraid to share your story. If somebody disagrees with you, if somebody gets in your face, if somebody posts a nasty tweet or something, that means that it's working.
I think you got that right. That's nice. Excellent advice. So let's talk about principals now, because my last question is, what advice would you give principals about helping them and their teachers escape the bucket? So basically the idea of, you know, giving advice to principals to help their teachers escape the bucket and want to, and, you know, obviously.
Yeah, super important. School leadership, all types of school leadership is, it is a great thing when you see school leadership do this well. And what I've seen is, to stay on the same storyline, so to speak, I encourage school leadership principals to share stories of success in the school. Now, this can be a little tricky because highlighting any individual teacher sort of puts a target on them, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's a little, and that's tough, but it's a tightrope, right? I think it's can be very powerful to share stories of success, even if it does put a target on the back or on the front of an individual teacher. And then, but make sure to identify and protect those teachers who have new ideas and who are trying new things, the ones that are being innovative. And this can be a little scary too, because what this means is that the principal then takes the target off the back of the teacher and puts it on themselves. But I think that's part of really powerful leadership, is somebody who will step up and do that and be like, I'm saying that this teacher is doing this thing really, really well. And I would love other people to be aware of that. I'd love other people to think about that. And if you have a problem with that, my office is right down the hall. You know, so protecting those teachers, protecting and nurturing that innovation. One example I was thinking of when I was thinking of this question is there was a principal named Drew Sawyer at Durant Road Middle School here in North Carolina in Raleigh, and when a colleague of mine, Katie Gimbar, who's done a lot of flipped classroom videos, a lot of flipped classroom work around the country, when she started doing the flipped classroom at Durant Road Middle School, it's kind of what he did. He said, oh, you know, to the staff, there's some really great stuff going on here. Here are some examples. He started modeling what she was doing himself, showing teachers, the other teachers, how it could be done. He started to promote it a bit, you know, like, this is a thing that I want people to start considering. And I think he got some feedback that wasn't all positive, but he kind of stood in front of Katie and said, if you have an issue with this, feel free to discuss it with me. And that gave her the ability to continue moving forward with the innovation. And it started to spread pretty well at Durant Road Middle School.
Excellent. That's, you know, it's so important, that, that leadership role, to help encourage them to want to try to do, to share their ideas and to pursue them. You know, it's because otherwise, if it's the opposite of it, then of course that the last thing you want to have happen in your school is the to have teachers feel like they have to be stagnant, or that they can't do what their ideas are, because, you know, there's this feeling that we can't go too far outside the box, because if we do, we're going to end up, it might cause us issues, and we can't worry about that, you know, that type of thing. So, but that's, thanks for sharing that story. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Lodge, I enjoy talking with you. I enjoy following you online and seeing what your latest escapades are. I really enjoyed reading Schooled. It's an excellent book, and I encourage everybody, you got to go check it out. I will put links to where you can find it in the show notes, as well as where you can hook up with Lodge on social media and at his website. I wish you the best. Take care, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.